We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right. Welcome to today's episode. Honored to have Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State University, with us. Scott, thanks for joining me.
Mike, it's great to be with you virtually, but I look forward to being with you in person at some time in the near future.
I know we're going to be doing that soon. And that's one of the great things about this pandemic sort of finally rolling into a place where we can all get out and see folks is regenerating relationships and visiting with people again. And just as you've had fans in your stands this fall, I know it's exciting to visit with people face-to-face and not just in a box, right? So we'll look forward to seeing you soon on that front.
No doubt.
I've got several things that I want to visit with you about. And there's several things that I think that are interesting about your time as an athletic director. And, you know, we'll sort of play off that and see where it takes us, if you will, as most of these interviews lend itself to that. And I really want to start was just from a career standpoint, your AD track, because I think it's interesting that if math serves me correct and I can count, I think you've been an athletic director now at 5 different institutions. Is that correct?
Yes, I think. I haven't counted lately. Yeah, I think you got it.
So 5 very different places, Humboldt State, Eastern Washington, Utah State, Pittsburgh, and now obviously Oregon State. And, you know, there are many different ways to ascend in the chair. And some folks work at one place the entire time. Some folks do a couple different places and their learning experiences along the way. I don't think there's a route that you say, hey, it has to happen this way. My question, just to sort of get us rolling, is, you know, when you look back on your career at five very different places, different areas of the country, some takeaways from just, you know, as you reflect back, the things that you learned along the way from being at different places. And maybe here's what I guess I would ultimately want you to talk about. And that's the common themes that you believe are inherent to success, even though you've been at different size institutions, different conferences, et cetera. Let's learn from your experience at those 5 different places.
Mike, a great question. Lots to unpack. You know, I sort of took what I refer to as an arduous path to the Power 5 AD chair. And I remember I was out at Iowa State as a fundraiser and overseeing some of the externals and working for Gene Smith, certainly one of my mentors in my career, and had a chance, just had our firstborn and had a chance to get back west with a Division II AD job. And it wasn't something that some of my mentors thought were going to be the best plan of attack. But it put us in between two sets of grandparents. It gave me a chance. I think I was about 34 to cut my teeth as an AD for the first time. And we did that for 2 years. I remember some of my mentors saying, hey, you can't be there long. I didn't go there with that mindset. I went there to try to make a difference. And then we climbed from there, Eastern Washington, a Division I job in my hometown of Spokane near it. No brainer, and near my parents. But a lot of my moves have been sort of career path oriented, but certainly thinking about family as well and tying those together. I think a common thread that I've been super blessed with is great relationships with the presidents that I've served with. And that partnership has been instrumental. And as I think about that and what I've learned from you know, early on, Ted Leland, who hired me at Pacific, and Gene Smith later at Iowa State, and then even Todd Turner late in my career before my first Group of Five AD job. Those partnerships on campus, obviously with your president, but how powerful it is to walk into a room arm in arm with the vice president for finance or student affairs or any one of your other key partners on your campus to help impact change. And you know, we're always talking about in athletics about things that have risk and are sometimes challenging the higher ed sort of model because we have a business component to what we do. So those partnerships, I think, and that relationship with the president, every step, everywhere I've been, and I've been blessed to have great ones and those that I've learned from, and been able to work with. But those campus partnerships become critical, particularly in times like this where, you're navigating so many issues at once.
Yeah. So I want to dive in a little bit more on the presidential question for just a second, because I fully resonate with that. You know, I had five presidents in 8 years during my time at Tennessee The alignment becomes so critical to your success as an athletic director because it drives the messaging on campus and how folks cooperate or not and that kind of thing. So when we're in an interview process, Scott, and we all, more than likely if we're in the process, we're wanting the job, right? And you're trying to let folks see who you are. But part of this is also that you need to be feeling out the institution, which you probably have done background research when you've gone into an interview process. But then when you get to the opportunity to engage a president, since you have brought that up as being a critical piece of this, as an athletic director, what do you look for when you say, is there proper alignment on campus? And is this the right president that I would want to be working with?
Yeah, I think it starts with a understanding of that individual's leadership style and the vision they've cast, the team they've built around them are all important parts to that. And you know, the athletic piece and how involved they are is important as well. Now, presidents can be too involved or not involved enough. And understanding their vision for athletics, for me, we believe wholeheartedly that an athletic program at this level serves to drive the mission of advancing the university. And I want a president to believe that there is a role, an integral role for a Power Five athletic program in advancing the mission of the university, and that they're all in on that. Certainly there's nuances to what that looks like, but overall, winning championships and graduating our student athletes and being, frankly, the overused statement, but being the front porch and that front porch serving as an opportunity to invite all sorts of stakeholders to your university through that athletic door to introduce them to all parts of campus, not just athletics. And those are the things that we talk about and I want to understand and I want clarity on when I'm when I'm talking about working with the president.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, you've got a new president, right? Is that correct now?
Ed Ray, who hired me, retired after a distinguished career, 17 years. Then we had an acting, and then we had a interim. So I'm on four presidents since I've been here, and one in between that just wasn't here long. So reality is we're searching now and hope to hire a new president next summer. So I will be going through this process yet again, Mike, and looking forward to, again, start establishing that relationship. And I think all that we do, and it's not just the AD, it's my staff all rowing the boat the same direction on our collaboration and our partnerships on campus. When that new leader comes to campus and they understand how effective we have been in building those relationships and partnerships, it goes a long ways.
Yeah, well, they'll be fortunate to have you alongside them as a leadership partner on campus when that transpires, I'm certain. You know, so when looking at the track record of the school, Scott, one of the things I picked up on was when you were at Utah State, you guys actually won an award for, and I may screw this up a little bit in how I say it, but basically winning the most championships with the smallest budget, I guess is the easiest way to say it for purposes of our conversation. And what I'm drawn to in seeing that is this. There are so many schools that feel like they have to enter the rat race to spend more money, to generate more revenue. And that is part of the game, true, for sure. But there's also such thing as hiring the right coaches, giving the right kind of support, creating the right kind of culture to still expect championships, even if the budget doesn't necessarily match some other schools in your league or in your region or whatever. And so I really wanted to hear your philosophy on that part of the discussion. And if what I'm saying is resonating with you at all.
Yeah, no, Mike, great, great question. And yeah, that award was based on sort of, having one of the smallest budgets and doing well with that. And if you look at across my career in the five places I've been, you know, the one other common thread is that, you know, been at places where we've had to punch above our weight. And there's a pride taken in that. But I'll tell you, when we won that first award at Utah State, the one thing I told my staff is that I wanted to move to a different weight class. That it was great punching above my weight, but we needed to, in our weight, but we needed to grow our budget to be more competitive. And yet there's a balance there. And I think the lesson is in that, look, we shouldn't let dollars or circumstances out of our control dictate our ability to succeed in the graduation of our student athletes, their experience, and winning championships. And it is about a plan, and it is about plugging the right people in, from who you hire around you and your executive team leadership to the coaches and the profile of the coaches you're looking for your unique place. And we've been very fortunate to hire some excellent coaches here at Oregon State, and we've done so in other stops, including Utah State. Part of that is a fit that, look, we're about grinding it out. We do take pride in the blue collar aspect of what we do, but we are also about being excellent and finding that coach that has a mentality that says, look, I'm not going to look around at all of the things I don't have to succeed, but rather I'm going to look for, number one, a partnership. And I always ask and talk to coaches about being a partner. I want a partner in this, and then building this together and being on the same page and selecting priorities that really move the needle, and not getting caught up, Mike, in just the flavor of the day in terms of what's being spent nationwide. But we're unique. We have a unique set of circumstances here. What are our priorities, and how do we chip away at those and in the process be excellent at what we're doing? And you know, we're fortunate. It does take excellent leadership in the coaches that we hire that are a great fit for this unique special place, and then supporting them and not getting caught up in things we'll never have. You know, we'll never close a gap with the top five budgets in America. That doesn't mean we can't compete with them.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So one of the jobs or opportunities you've had in your career as athletic director, Scott, has been to chair the NCAA basketball committee. And I think, you know, certainly the CFP committee has gained some stature over the last few years, but historically speaking, the NCAA basketball committee has been sort of a capstone role that most athletic directors want to participate in at some time during their career. And that's a slippery slope. And I think for those who I know who have actually served on the committee, in that while there is prestige involved in that and there's honor in that, and it's a significant piece of the NCAA process, it's also a very difficult role. And then further, you chaired the committee at during your time there, and to sit there on a Sunday and take the questions fired at you by CBS and others, I know is sometimes maybe fun and maybe sometimes not as fun, right? So for those who are, a lot of folks who listen to this podcast are younger folks in the industry, but also those who are really in AD chairs, but maybe have not had some of the chances that you've had so far. And I'm interested for you to sort of pull back the curtain and tell a little bit about what it was like to serve on the basketball committee for those 4 or 5 years and chair the committee, not only as an honor, but also the things that you experienced and learned through that process.
Yeah, Mike, it was an absolute honor, and to chair my last year was tremendous. It's one of those, you know, five year commitment. One former chair sort of did a little bit of math on the back of a napkin once and said that 5 year term of service equated to one full year of your life in terms of the hours that you put in to being in that. And so, you know, one of the things that was really important and really appreciate about Danny Gavitt and the NCAA championship group was how they took care of our families because we were gone so long. So I, you know, my son was a ball boy for the 5 years at the Final Four during my time. My daughter was always there. They kind of grew up in those 5 years at Final Fours with me and around me. And obviously a lot of meetings in between that we were gone to. But I think, you know, the thing I learned early in my career, and I learned it best from Gene Smith, who really is what I call a citizen of the industry, who is involved in many aspects of leadership in our industry. And, you know, giving back and wanting to help lead and improve, you know, if we can in our own way, the industry, in this case, basketball, men's basketball, which as a former college player was really near and dear to my heart as well. So the opportunity to help impact positive change in that 5 years and give yourself to the industry was really, really rewarding. A lot of work, a lot of hours. And then certainly the relationships. As you can imagine, the time we spend in the room together, getting to know the families of the committee members and the committee members who are our dear friends for life after that time together, right? So really, you know, important work, and was honored to be part of that work and you know, still have a connection to that as a committee alum now and going back and participating in some meetings during the Final Four every year.
That's great. Well, that's a kudos for having done that. I'm going to stay on the theme of basketball for a second. You know, I can't talk to the Oregon State Athletic Director without talking to you about the run that your team made in postseason last year, because it was quite phenomenal and obviously got a lot of national attention. You know, if I recall correctly, you finished in somewhere in the middle of the pack in the Pac-12 regular season, but went on a run and won the Pac-12 championship for the first time in almost 30 years, and then got in the NCAA tournament and went on a run there as well within just a hair of being in the Final Four. So I'm curious, as a former basketball player and being around the team, was there a time late in the season, maybe before you even got to the Pac-12 tournament, where you saw something in the team that said, hey, these guys have got something there? Or was it the, you know, sort of the emotion, the energy of a postseason play actually happening and then catching the fire? Just talk a little bit about the 2021 basketball squad and that run at the end of the year.
Yeah, so unique. In fact, we were picked to finish last in the Pac-12 to start the preseason and finish in the middle and then won the championship, as you said. What a unique experience being in the bubble to begin with, right? So unlike any other year, you know, we left the Pac-12 tournament and were in the bubble throughout. And I stayed in that bubble with the team. So I got a peek under the hood maybe more than I would have with other obligations outside the bubble, and at least for those first couple of weeks before I went and saw our women play. And you know, the thing about this is you can say, like, you know, there's a lightning in the bottle sort of aspect to this, but it that you don't catch that without a real strong foundation, Mike. And our coaching staff had been building that. We thought the year before we thought we had a shot at making a run in postseason and had started that process before the Pac-12 tournament canceled. So it was coming. I think what we saw solidified, what I saw solidified and was privy to in the locker rooms after games, but saw it mid to maybe two thirds of the way through, was this ability to understand and execute their individual roles. And as you know, one of the most important aspects of being a really good coach is identifying and securing those roles that student athletes are willing to be buy in, all in on. We protected defensively. We did really well. But the other thing that I saw in this group was this undeniable joy in playing the game. In buying into their role, and then the selflessness that came with that was incredible. And so, you know, we were literally beating teams that had another level of talent than we did. But that selflessness and role clarity were really key to this. I think there's a foundation there without question that's been being built for years, and that allowed us to sort of grab that lightning in the bottle and execute into almost making the Final Four and really having a historic year and something to build on, something that has already impacted our ability to recruit and our brand really as a basketball program.
Yeah, there's nothing like postseason basketball, particularly when you're making a run and you're in the middle of that and the energy around the team and right. So forth. It's pretty incredible. I coming out of that experience in Indianapolis, I'm curious your take on having been there during that time, and you know, you had the games in up at Purdue and at IU and over at Hinkle Fieldhouse and others. And granted, there weren't the number of fans on site as there would be in a normal year. But did you not see? I felt like there was an incredible amount of excitement around the fact that you could hop from one facility to another facility if you weren't associated with a particular school. And it kind of spurred me to think about, gosh, could you ever do that where you played, you know, a Sweet 16, all the Sweet 16s in a city? Or it's going to be hard if you go to 64, 68 teams, right? Because just hotel space. But I'm curious if you saw that as something that was, you know, something that needs to be sort of noodled on a little bit more or,
No, yeah, I think you're exactly right, Mike. In fact, I talked with several committee members about that energy. You know, putting COVID and all the restrictions aside, that vibe of being in one city was really something that I think we're all thinking more about long term. And is that really an approach that we might want to take down the road in terms of the tournament? And there's a lot of moving parts right now. From NCAA governance to all the other issues that are out there, but as the dust settles and we look for the midterm to long term future, I think that has to be evaluated because there is a electricity, a vibrance and efficiency in how all that was put together. Kudos to the NCAA and the men's basketball committee for how they did that because. It really was phenomenal, and take away the isolation and the COVID aspect of it, which was a challenge, but they handled beautifully. Take that away, and you've got a really interesting, I think, opportunity to continue to evaluate.
Does that decision, Scott? I know there are a lot of moving parts, but you've been on the basketball committee. You're on the basketball oversight committee. Obviously, Lead One weighs in, NABC weighs in, that kind of thing. At the end of the day, what's the body that makes that kind of decision? Is it the basketball committee?
Well, that'll be in conjunction with moving forward. We'll be locking arms more closely with the women's basketball committee and the women's basketball oversight committee. Joint meetings along the way. So these types of things will be talked about, and with those groups ultimately decided at the board level and whatnot. But certainly the creation and the development of the idea and what that looks like comes out of those committees and moves forward from there. So, the practitioners will be at it. And I'm not suggesting that this will be. I'm suggesting I like the idea that it would be looked at as one opportunity for a long-term play.
Yeah. Well, the good news is they're not going to make a decision based on you and I talking on this podcast today, right?
But I don't think so.
But at least it's fun to sort of speculate a little bit about what might be. Okay, let's turn to Oregon State football for a second. Two pieces of info I kind of want to dig into here a little bit. One is you're undertaking a major renovation at Reser Stadium, $150 million plus. A part of that is, I think, maybe some premium spaces improved upon, a seating reduction, which is becoming more of the norm in today's environment. And then couple that with Jonathan Smith, who's one of your alums, coaching there and had success as a student athlete, and now he's back and seems to really be gaining momentum in terms of how he's turning the program around as well. Those two things can play together, right? I mean, when you're doing renovation, you want to be on an uptick in many ways. But curious the genesis of the decision to do the renovation, and then maybe comment on just what it's been like to have an Oregon State alum running the football program as you go through this time.
Sure, Mike. No, you know, this was completing research is the name of the project, and we remodeled the east side. Built the east side in 2005 and sort of left the west side where it sits. And so it'll be a total demolition. Making this happen during COVID has been interesting. I'll tell you that in some ways our fundraising has been enhanced because of the ability to connect with people more quickly. Those stakeholders that are near and dear to us that, you know, we didn't have a lot of relationship building with, but could connect with and get through the solicitation process. So, you know, we had an $85 million philanthropic goal alone, and that goal has been exceeded, and we've raised the bar to 90, and we're almost going to hit 90 now, very close to that. So really excited about the fundraising process. This project is very unique, Mike, in several ways. One is in spending what will be investing up to $160 million in this project. We wanted year-round use. We wanted robust year-round use, not just game days. And so we have a wellness clinic that will serve all of our campus community health and wellness for our students generally and our staff, and then a three-peat partnership with a local health group that will create an urgent care clinic out of this operation as well. Another component that's year-round is a welcome center for general student campus recruitment. Our current welcome center is about 150 square foot cubicle in our academic center for the university. So this is these two items along with additional conferencing space create some unbelievable opportunities for this campus and community way beyond football Saturdays. A couple other items that are unique, the financial model for this, the leverage at $90 million in cash creates and lowering that annual debt service, coupled with a myriad of new revenue streams, not only pays for this project, but will create $2.5 million plus in new operating capital to our athletic department to fund all of our programs. So excited about that. A couple other items that are unique. One is that the premium seating will be as close to the field as any in the Power Five. So just dramatic views from premium. That's we're knocking the socks off that. We create a sales center at the start of football season in Gill Coliseum, our basketball venue, for patrons to come in and literally take a virtual view, sit in the exact seat they'll sit in, and make a decision. And we have sold out of our first inventory of top premium already here, you know, and we're not opening till 23. So really excited about that. And then the open concourse, we call it Beaver Street, and affectionately named Beaver Street. It is a connection point between the north and south on the west side of our stadium, but it'll connect the entire stadium, which we didn't have before. So 360 degree, but as importantly, that concourse is an open concept. So if you're walking down Beaver Street, you can grab your favorite beverage and food and be watching the game at the same time, under some cover. Really just a tremendous concept. So really excited about the work that our design build team has done. And we'll start demolition when we're playing the Ducks here Thanksgiving weekend. We'll start abatement and demolition and be open in 23, summer of 23.
So I'm curious, are you phasing it in such a way that you can do the construction in the off seasons so that it won't affect your 22 season, or how's that going to play out?
Unfortunately not. So we'll be a bit of an unmitigated disaster in 22, and then we'll be playing with a west side that's completely down, minus a new platform and some erected steel that we'll be able to put some of the game ops components on in a temporary fashion. We'll use the north, south, and east to accommodate all of our season ticket holders. Take one game to Portland, 7-game schedule, so a little relief in taking one to Portland. And that's what'll, you know, we'll plan that. You know, every AD in the country understands that sometimes you've got to you work through that, and we've got a good plan to do that. So that's 2022, and then open summer 23 and ready to roll fall of 23.
That's fantastic. Well, and I really like the fact you're utilizing it for more than just game day. I think that's the direction that we have to be thinking about in a lot of the renovation work in today's world, right? Multi-purpose. And you know, we're talking about in our business, you know, so many times folks have looked at what we do in the multimedia rights business as being tentpole events around games. And the reality is fandom is 365, right? And so How do we engage fans throughout the year? And what you're doing there is you're engaging your campus community throughout the year. So kudos to you on that. Just a quick comment on Jonathan and the job he's doing there for you guys.
Sorry, Mike.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I, you know, just even talking about the stadium renovation and some of the promotional materials, you know, you go back in history and you share some of those highlights of history. You know, he was a legendary walk-on quarterback and won a Fiesta Bowl in the 2001 Fiesta Bowl. And in some of those highlights and the footage that we have in some of our sales materials to talk. Keith Jackson, the great Keith Jackson, is covering, I think, our win against USC that year, and talks about Jonathan Smith as somebody that wants to be a head coach one day, and that coaches like Erickson and Riley believe that he will be one day. This is 21 years ago. And circle back now, 21 years later, and not only is he a head college coach making his way, and it's got a really positive trajectory, but it's at his alma mater. And that is unique, and it's really special. It's special for our fan base. It's special. You know, he really understands the vibe of this campus, the qualities in terms of his passion and conviction for recruiting to this special place. Those are things you can't manufacture. And he has it, and he's put a great staff around him. So very, very excited about Jonathan being at the helm in year four, and making progress, and the future is bright.
That's awesome. Well, hey, look, there are a lot of things we can talk about business wise. I always like to end the conversation with just a couple of things to let folks get to know you personally. First thing I would ask you is, how old are your kids? First, by the way, you're talking about your kids a minute ago.
Yeah, so Isaac is a senior entrepreneur major here at Oregon State. He was a walk-on basketball player here and had three major surgeries on three different parts of his body. So he medically retired, but enjoyed his experience, is enjoying his senior year in that capacity and being a just a student, and it's served him great. And then my daughter is 25, and she is part-time music art major, has had some medical issues about with Lyme disease, and has fought her way through that to get back. Was an all-state volleyball player, unbelievable talented artist and piano player, and working her way back. So those are my two kids.
Awesome. What do you guys like to do as a family if you can get away from the office for a few hours?
Yeah, so Isaac and I typically take a trip every year, fly at least one trip fly fishing, and we'll do some bird hunting when we can. But we took an epic trip this last summer to Wyoming to do some fly fishing. It was wonderful. As a family, we like to get to the coast. We've got a place about an hour and a half from Corvallis, right on the Oregon coast, and we like to use that as our summer retreat, bringing friends and family through there all summer, and that's sort of how we spend the bulk of our summer, other than some fly fishing in between. Jody is not 33 years of marriage. She and I met at Fresno State. She's a track athlete, a lot better athlete than I was. She is not yet warmed up to having that hook in the fish's mouth. So we, Isaac and I, try to work on her. Milana has and will, I think, again partake in fly fishing. You know, being outdoors is great. Being at the beach house is awesome. And, I love my family. You know, a lot of decisions I've made in my career, Mike, have been around family. And it sort of created a bit of an arduous path that I mentioned to here. But it all works. And it's been awesome.
Well, you know, I've always said, athletics is the career where you can have your kids around you some, which is a benefit, particularly given the amount of time. One time I was in an event in our skybox is at Tennessee, and I got off the elevator and they had the name tags laid out, and I was looking for my name tag and I didn't have a name tag. And they said, well, you don't need a name tag. You're the athletic director. And I said, no, I need a name tag in case my kids show up, right? So that they don't know who I am. But it is a career that our families can be around. And there's some joy in that. And when you and I get together again, I want to talk a little bit more with you about your fly fishing and your bird hunting experiences. And you've been kind to give me your time today. I appreciate so much the opportunity to engage with you on a few topics here. There's a lot more that we could cover, obviously, but we also want to be respectful of the time we've had together. So I appreciate you joining me, Scott.
Oh, no, thank you. And lots going on in college athletics right now. So the more we can all connect and talk about the issues moving forward, the better off we'll be. And thanks for your time, Mike. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. So you've been listening to Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State University, one of the guys who's been around a long time and knows this business well. I'm Mike Hamilton. I'm your host from the chair. We hope you'll join us again next time. Thank you and have a good day.